This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Moozy.com.
Welcome to Moozy.com, America's favorite free-to-play social casino, offering the fastest payouts around. With over 3,000 games at your fingertips, generous bonuses, and daily rewards, Moozy.com is the best. Play today at Moozy.com.
Moozy.com is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Moozy.com for more details.
Sign up today for an amazing welcome bonus at Moozy.com.
Moozy.com.
Breathing deeply while listening to ocean waves can help reduce stress. Inhale, 3, 2, 1. Exhale, 3, 2, 1. Let's keep solving. For more health solutions, go to floridablue.com. Florida Blue is a trade name of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida, Inc.
I, Donald John Trump, will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
It's been 100 days since President Donald Trump came into office. And under his leadership, there have been major changes to U.S. climate policy and research.
We will rapidly expedite leases for coal mining on federal lands. We will end the government bias against coal.
The windmills are driving the whales crazy. They're littered all over our country like garbage.
I'm immediately withdrawing from the unfair, one-sided Paris Climate Accord ripoff.
The Paris Accord is the most important climate agreement the world has ever seen. It commits countries to limiting global warming to ideally 1.5 degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times. And the US will be one of only four countries not to be a part of it. There have also been cuts to climate science, rollbacks on environmental legislation, and new tariffs disrupting the trade of clean technologies.
In a few moments, I will sign a historic executive order instituting reciprocal tariffs on countries throughout the world. Reciprocal, that means they do it to us and we do it to them.
And so, on the climate question from the BBC World Service, we're asking, will Trump 2.0 slow down the green transition in the US and across the world?
I'm your guide, Greya Jackson, and later in the show, we've got two top climate commentators to discuss. But first, let's get the rundown from Carl Nassmann, climate journalist with BBC News based in Washington, D.C. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Graham.
Carl, I have a challenge for you, if I may. If you could pick one quote of President Donald Trump's that really illustrates the ideological shift around climate between Biden's administration and his, what would it be?
Ooh, that is a big challenge. The first one, obviously, that comes to mind is drill, baby, drill. But he's been saying that for a long time. And I thought that one thing that kind of stuck in my mind from the campaign trail, but also, you know, when we saw on his first day of office, he had this stack of executive orders and he was signing one after another after another. And he, when it came to climate, you know, obviously we saw him take the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement with one of those executive orders. But then there's this other one where he was talking about he really wants to unleash American energy. And this is really kind of the theme of what he has tried to do or said he's tried to do over these first 100 days is to bring back American energy, to get rid of the red tape, to loosen the restrictions, especially on things like fossil fuel. He really sees coal as something that would play a part here. And he signed an executive order to reinvigorate America's what he called beautiful, clean coal industry. So interestingly, he wants coal actually classified as a critical mineral. He wants to drill on federal lands. He wants to start to explore in the Alaska wilderness, other national parks across the country. You know, at the same time, it's not just promoting fossil fuels. He's also begun to kind of hold back greener technology. So he's really slowed down the permitting for things like offshore wind and onshore wind power, definitely taken the foundation and the confidence away from the green energy industry. $8 billion of U.S. climate technology projects have already been canceled so far this year. I mean, we're talking about some very large-scale battery, solar, and wind projects. So this is having a very real effect.
Yeah, and he's also been reversing sort of key U.S. climate regulations. I mean, there are so many different orders that we could mention, but what are the key changes for you?
Ooh, okay. Well, I think maybe the best place to start there would be what he's trying to do with the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Really, what it seems like he's trying to do is have the EPA lead this effort to try to eliminate many of the regulations that have been put in place to kind of protect the environment. He's been cutting things like science and research, NOAA, which is a really important agency, a $1.3 billion cut there. This is something that looks at our oceans and tracks the way hurricanes move. He wants to cut back FEMA. This is the organization within the U.S. that helps to respond to natural disasters. So really, the list goes on. And many of these things, we should say, there's a caveat here that he can't do everything on his own. He can issue some executive orders, but Congress is going to be involved here. They'll have to make any changes to actual laws. And there's been just a flurry of court challenges. So a lot of this stuff is held up right now in various courts across the country. But the feeling is that this really is a big push. It has a lot of momentum.
You mentioned NOAA there, Carl. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And in February, the Associated Press reported that 1,300 people were fired from that institution. Climate scientist Tom DiLiberto was one of those who got the sack, and I spoke to him about what happened.
So I started working at NOAA as a contractor almost 15 years ago. I became a federal employee over 2 years ago at this point. And I was a climate scientist, and I helped NOAA tell the story about all the work that it did and why it was important.
Right. And also, you were on the climate question before, right? Talking about El Nino.
I was.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I was part of the El Nino, La Nina, ENSO team at NOAA. So whenever the United States declared whether an El Nino or La Nina was here, I had a hand in that.
So tell me what happened at the end of February.
So I received an email that was pretty cold, almost like a chain letter, that said that my skills were no longer needed or fits for the agency's needs.
And what happened next then?
I was fired on February 27th. The courts in the United States reinstated me on March 17th. And then on April 10th, I was refired again. It's still very, very confusing.
Right. So they upheld NOAA's decision to fire you.
Right.
What's the mood around all this change and uncertainty? Are people beginning to look for jobs abroad in the private sector? What's happening?
I feel like there's been a different schedule, I would feel, for how people have dealt with their grief. But now I feel like a lot of folks are applying for jobs in the United States, but they're definitely looking elsewhere. The first cuts, those 1,300 people you mentioned, it's not the end. We're expecting to see more. And it's clear that, at least in the United States, climate research, whether that's done through the U.S. government or even in higher education and in the nonprofit world, is going to be kind of persona non grata here.
I'm interested in the fact you used the word grief, Tom. Is that what you're feeling?
I mean, absolutely. I just want to help people. So seeing the work that I do attacked so much, seeing the people who I know who are doing so much work being fired along with me, and then even knowing the people who are still there trying to do their jobs under fire constantly, it's really, really hard to take, especially because, you know, I know that based on the science, this is going to lead to people getting hurt. Denying climate change is going to lead to people getting hurt. Degrading the way that NOAA can do what it does to help protect Americans and people across the world is going to lead to people getting hurt. And I initially grieve for like myself losing my job, but I feel like a lot of the grief and the sadness and kind of turning into anger is more geared towards the people going to be impacted by this. So I'm just trying to turn that grief into action as best I can.
I mean, it's worth saying that we are living in a world of competing issues. You know, there's wars, cost of living crisis, and the Americans did vote for Donald Trump, and his administration is trying to find these financial efficiencies, he calls them, and doesn't really see the value in climate research.
The cuts are going to cost more money to the American people than they're going to save. It's pretty clear when you think of how many billion-dollar disasters happen in the United States, how many more will happen if you have worse weather forecasts, if you have less people working on improving coastal conditions or improving drought forecasts or just improving the resilience of our communities. That saves money in the long term. And the thing is, climate change is making extremes worse. So we know things are going to get worse, which is only going to cause more damage. You can't really save yourself by sticking your head in the sand when it comes to these. We're only going to see the cost of these extremes worsen.
So are you saying that NOAA will no longer be able to predict when hurricanes happen? Are the cuts that drastic?
Because of these cuts, we're no longer launching nearly as many weather balloons into the air. That means less information getting into our models, which means our models are going to degrade in their ability to predict as accurately as they have before. And I always get asked too in the United States, well, why don't we just use the European model? Well, the European model uses the exact same data. So if you degrade the data that goes into weather models, whether they're made in the United States, in Europe, or elsewhere, you're going to basically reduce the accuracy of those models worldwide.
Is there any chance that the private sector might pick up this mantle?
It would be really hard for them to pick up. It'd be hard for the globe to pick up what's being lost to the United States, only because the United States puts so much money into science and research. The difficulty is satellites, that the likes of which are geostationary satellites up in space that are monitoring literally half the planet at times, they're very, very expensive. They take decades of research before they get launched into space. That's not easily replicable by a private sector. These kind of satellites that are talked about that are from SpaceX, they're not nearly the same as intricate as the geostationary satellites up in space, of which two of that covering half the planet are from NOAA. And it's going to be affected globally because we're just going to have less information. The United States has some of the world leading experts when it comes to things like sea level rise, when it comes to climate model development, when it comes to the scientists who take part in the IPCC. Usually there was a good smattering of government scientists that would do that. No more. So that will not also go into these international collaborations. And there's a lot of work internationally that's done with help from the United States. And now you can basically expect that voice to no longer be there in the global picture.
Tom DiLiberto, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
The IPCC, by the way, is the United Nations body for assessing the science related to climate change. Now, Carl, back to you. What was striking to me about that conversation was the impact that this would have not only on US citizens, but the world as a whole, not just in our ability to forecast extreme weather, but also like our climate models forecasting the future and what might happen in 10, 20, 30 years' time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's this sense that the Trump administration has been trying to eliminate even mentions of climate change in official documents. And what stood out to me was that phrase, you know, we can't be just sticking our heads in the sand or denying the impacts of climate change. And I think in some ways, you know, the Trump administration wouldn't say that. They almost see some of these regulations as outdated. They claim, you know, these aren't necessary anymore. But yeah, it was a very interesting interview.
The other thing I have to talk to you about, Carl, is the tariffs. These are taxes charged on goods bought from other countries. I know this has been changing a lot. It's a constantly evolving story. But what tariffs are in place at the moment?
It's dangerous to say at the moment because it is almost by the hour these are changing. But right now there's this blanket 10% tariff on most countries, except for China, which has a much larger set of tariffs on it right now. And China is where so much of these things like solar panels are manufactured, critical minerals that are necessary for things like batteries. A lot of that comes from China, too. So these tariffs really could disrupt global trade in green technologies. We're talking about things from electric cars all the way to wind turbines.
Carl, we spoke last in November when Trump was elected. Just how much has the climate conversation changed since then?
I think if you look at just the vibes here, the way that people talk about climate change, that's changed overnight. It's just not the same kind of atmosphere. You don't hear corporations touting their 2030 or 2050 emissions goals anymore right now. You don't hear about breaking climate science being done at a certain university. People are a little bit scared. I think there's been a chilling effect. And I think it'll also be interesting to see how countries react to this. Of course, the president took the U.S. again out of the Paris Climate Agreement. How does the rest of the world deal with the U.S., which again is saying, you know, we're not going to be a part of this treaty and this effort to keep global warming to about 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Carl Massmann, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
A reminder that you're listening to The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
Mic check, 1, 2. Are we recording? Hi, I'm Michelle Bernstein, an award-winning chef, restaurateur, and mom. I have a lot on my plate, including my psoriatic arthritis symptoms. That's why I was prescribed Cosentyx. It helps me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Welcome to Moozee.com, America's favorite free-to-play social casino, offering the fastest payouts around. With over 3,000 games at your fingertips, generous bonuses, and daily rewards, Moozee.com is the best. Play today at Moozee.com.
Moozee.com is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Moozee.com for more details.
Sign up today for an amazing welcome bonus at Moozee.com.
Moozee.com.
I'm your guide, Greer Jackson. And as I mentioned before, we have two top climate commentators ready to discuss what these new policies mean for the green transition. Regular listeners will remember both Zerrin Osho and Justin Rowlatt. Hello to you both.
Hi, Greer.
Hello. Thank you so much for coming on. You guys had not met before, but a reminder for listeners, Justin Rowlatt is the BBC's climate editor and Zerrin Osho is the director of the India programme at the Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development and based in Washington, D.C. Zerrin, last time I spoke to you was when Trump was elected back in November. And if I remember rightly, you were of the view that Trump could slow down the green transition, but not by much. Just remind us of why that was, and if 6 months on, you still hold that view.
Thanks, Greer. Yes, I do remember that conversation. And 6 months on, I still stand by what I said the last time. And, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. So economics did trump Trump.
Why do economics trump Trump? Just remind our listeners of why you think that is.
The economics proves that. And, you know, we've now seen solar prices decrease year on year. If I speak about India, solar is at par with fossil fuel-based energy. So when you have the option to choose between coal and solar, it makes no sense for anybody to pick coal. And we live in a very globalized world, right? So an individual action, which is limited to the United States of America, can cause disruptions in supply chains, global supply chains. They can cause disruptions in timelines, but they cannot stall the momentum that has been built over the last 30 years, three decades. And you also now have China in the picture, you have India in the picture, you have Europe in the picture. All those three engines of growth are going to lead the way, knowing fully well that America may have stepped back for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, you've been reporting on this a lot as the BBC's climate editor. Has Trump managed to slow that green transition domestically down in the US?
Yeah, I think he's been more aggressive in trying to slow the transition than people expected. So as Carl said, sort of blocking, you know, licensing for offshore wind and other renewable projects, but also not just stopping the funding, you know, the unspent funding, if you like, for renewable projects and clean energy projects around the US, but also trying to claw back funding that's already gone out to bodies, which is quite unusual and quite controversial. So I think that's been more aggressive than people thought. The attack on kind of climate institutions has has been more profound than I think people expected. Just this week, Trump sacked hundreds of volunteer scientists who are working on something called the National Climate Assessment, looking at how rising temperatures will affect kind of health of people in America, agriculture, fisheries, water supply, the transport system, et cetera, et cetera. So they've all been sacked at very short notice. Yet another example of how kind of comprehensive, if you like, his attack on all aspects of climate policy has been.
And do you think that's managed to slow down the green transition by much? Has it managed to stop the green transition in the US?
I don't think it will stop it. I think the economics are very strong. The underlying economics, you know, it is a very cheap energy source. But if somebody's actively trying to block it, that really will slow it down. America, of course, is a buyer of clean technologies, not so much a seller of clean technologies. China overwhelmingly is the supplier of those. And one imagines that the solar panels, the wind turbines, the EVs, the batteries, all that stuff that China's making will be diverted to other markets. But not having the world's second biggest polluter actively involved, you know, positively involved in the energy transition, makes a difference. America also is a kind of bellwether. It's a fashion setter for attitudes to these kind of things. And around the world, we can see other countries kind of withdrawing or becoming, expressing more skeptical views. I mean, notably, of course, Argentina under Milei, but Indonesia has also sort of suggested that it doesn't want to see a transition this far. So Eastern European countries saying similar things. So I think it adds an excuse, if you like. Countries and companies can use kind of Trump's approach to climate as cover to kind of reduce their effort in terms of renewables. And there's another thing that you can see happening, which is this phenomenon of green hushing. That's when companies are actively involved in efforts to tackle climate change. They've got projects that they really do want to continue, but they want to play them down for fear that Trump will criticize them and perhaps even penalize them for being actively involved and advocating on behalf of climate. Look, I think it has been more chilling than I expected. I don't know, Zarin, if you'd agree with that.
I think I would agree to you to the extent that implications of Trump 2.0 are going to be far more domestically in the US compared to the Europeans and the Indians and the Chinese. The electric vehicle market, as you said, Justin, is going to be deeply impacted. You know, we had vehicle efficiency standards here in the US that have been rolled back. And what I personally feel is the Americans are going to be losing global competition to China. And the best case study, I think, to consider here would be the BYD versus Tesla. These two companies, the sales were neck to neck. And in 2025, for the first time this year, BYD is expected to take over Tesla, which directly hurts Elon Musk. So Trump administration is going to be losing the competitive edge American companies have over, say, Chinese companies, in this case, BYD.
Zarin, sorry to interrupt you. What's BYD?
BYD is a Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer. It stands for Beyond Your Dreams. And very interesting things happened to the oil and gas sector. So since the announcement of the tariffs, the oil and gas markets plunged to about 15%. We've now seen OPEC countries announce a tripling of output, which is further going to plummet prices of oil by about 6%. This does not make increasing oil extraction profitable or even feasible economically. So you've seen, you know, commodity traders like Citibank coming out and warning investors against investing in the oil sector or oil as a commodity. They also go into explaining how the extraction costs have increased about 5% due to the tariffs. So I don't think it's drill, baby, drill. I think it's more like wait, baby, wait. Because
you have so many great little slogans. Economics, wait, Trump, it's... Trump, wait, baby, wait. What's going to be the next one? I'm excited.
Who knows?
Justin, you touched on this before, but tariffs could also mean opportunities for other countries to form alliances and pick up the slack where that US market is dropping off, right?
No, undoubtedly. And as I said, at the heart of all of this is China. And let's not forget, China's built these extraordinary trade routes around the world with its Belt and Road Initiative, building ports, railways, roads in countries in Africa, South America, across Asia, and so forth. Those are designed, you know, for trading relationships between these countries. Primarily, I think China's vision is it's selling goods, maybe bringing primary resources in, but selling goods into the world. It's put this huge emphasis on the renewable industry, and it will be looking to expand that industry around the world. You see some really interesting signals of China wanting to reassert its kind of its role, if you like, I mean, in its own words, as a responsible global citizen, sticking to its commitments on climate change. You know, it very recently in meeting with the Secretary General of the UN, you know, restated its commitment both to the Paris Agreement and also to the underlying agreement for UN climate negotiations, the UNFCCC, and stepping back a bit and trying to get a bit of perspective on why it's doing that. Well, yes, it's very concerned about the impact of climate change on China, but also it's got this great surplus of supplies of electric vehicles, BYD, etc., as we were just hearing, solar panels and so forth, and it wants to sell those to the rest of the world. And its message is, look, together we can grow. We'll sell you the solar panels, but we'll help you with industries that you've got. So it's a very different message that it's sending the rest of the world. And one does wonder whether this is not just an opportunity for China to seize the initiative in this vast new renewable markets that are growing all over the world, but also to kind of re-engineer the world economy so the flows are through China rather than, as they have been in the past, through the West, through Europe and America. It's a really interesting moment globally, I think.
Yeah, to see how it all pans out. I mean, Zarin, I didn't talk about this with Carl, but there have also been huge cuts to foreign climate finance and aid abroad too. And I wonder, what impact is that having on global climate diplomacy?
Yes, that's a very important topic, actually, Greya. So, of course, you know, America's absence is one that is felt. You know, like Justin pointed out, it's the moment to create the coalition of the willing. And U.S. aid cuts affects the low-income countries the most. I mean, the humanitarian aspect of it is huge, and we'll need, you know, an entire different episode to discuss what that means for the poorest of the poor. But just speaking from a climate diplomacy standpoint, this matters hugely for countries that are dependent for climate finance, for clean energy transition on the U.S. So, for instance, you have Colombia in South America that is significantly dependent on energy transition and its COP, you know, negotiations and its targets to be fulfilled with the assistance provided by countries like the US.
And I mean, much of the developing world's climate targets are contingent on foreign aid, which
That's
I think
right.
is worth talking about. I suppose I'm wondering, Justin, you know, we're a few months away from COP in Belém in Brazil. It's 10 years since the Paris Agreement. What do you think this will mean for COP this year, this massive and really important climate conversation we have every year?
So the deadline that the UN gave the countries of the world to come up with estimates of the carbon cuts they'd make in the decade to come. So this charts the future direction of the emissions reductions and therefore long-term climate change. By the deadline on the 10th of February that the UN had set, wait for it, 95% of countries did not hit the deadline. Now, to put that in a bit of context, lots of countries always miss the deadline and mostly make it up at the last moment. But it's really significant because the hope was that this meeting in Brazil in November would set the agenda for a really ambitious carbon cut into the next decade. It's absolutely crucial that we bend the curve on emissions. Now, we're setting the thermostat for the world now, crucially. And if we're going to keep it at a safe level, so well below 2 degrees, we need to really make big changes now. The fact that countries aren't enthusiastically coming forward and saying we've really bought in to this, we're really committed to it, suggests we're going to struggle to get the kind of ambition that the scientists tell us are needed. So real danger sign there. Now, you can't link that directly to Trump's policies, but the kind of upheaval that he represents in the world community, the sort of chaos and disorder that he's brought, obviously will be a factor in that, and is a warning sign that the negotiations in Belém in November are going to be tricky. And, you know, fingers crossed that we'll get the ambitious outcome that will ensure the world gets emissions cuts that will moderate climate change.
Zarin Osho and Justin Rayla, I could talk to you all day about this, but unfortunately we've run out of time. But thank you so much. Really appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greya. Great chat.
And thank you for listening. Remember, you can have your climate questions answered on the show. Whack them into an email and send them to theclimatequestion@bbc.com. The production team this week was producers Sophie Eastor and Beth Timmons. The editor was Simon Watts, and sound magicians were Tom Bricknell and Gabriel O'Regan. I'm Greer Jackson, and we'll be back next week. Make sure you subscribe to the Climate Question podcast so you don't miss it.
Welcome to Moozee.com, America's favorite free-to-play social casino, offering the fastest payouts around. With over 3,000 games at your fingertips, generous bonuses, and daily rewards, Moozee.com is the best. Play today at Moozee.com.
Moozee.com is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Moozee.com for more details.
Sign up today for an amazing welcome bonus at Moozee.com.
Moozee.com.
Dreaming of a high-paying career in healthcare? At Broward College, you can explore numerous high-paying career opportunities with flexible learning options and a variety of programs like nursing, EMT, respiratory care, and more. Broward College is proud to be ranked number one for the least student debt, offering top-quality education without the financial stress. Start your journey towards a fulfilling healthcare career today. Register for in-person and online classes today at broward.edu/health. Your future is within reach at broward.edu/health.